welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And my new book, No is a Four-Letter Word, is coming out August 29th. But you can pre-order it right now at my Amazon store. Just go to amazon.com/shop/IamJericho. It is a brand new tome, more of a self-help motivational book, how you too can achieve your goals in 20 easy lessons and with 20 easy principles. So I think you're really going to like it. August 29th, I'll be hitting the streets, doing some signings, doing a lot of press, and you can go check it out, get that pre-order in now and be the first one to get it when it is released August 29th. Go check that out. And speaking of checking something out, we got a couple of Talk is Jericho alumni returning to the show today for you to check out. They've both been here as singles, but today, making their tag team debut on Talk is Jericho, it's the WWE Tag Team Champions of the World, Cesaro and Sheamus. That's right. You're going to hear about their best of seven program that led to their tag team partnering, how it's been adjusting to tag team wrestling in general after being singles for so many years. They're talking about the respective injuries that sidelined both of them for a while and what it's been like to come back to WWE and have to reinvent and reestablish themselves. It means great stories about the tearaway suits, the sunglasses, Sheamus's braided beard and mohawk. Both are foreigners in the States, just like me, an Irish, a Swiss, and a Canadian walk into a bar and do a podcast together. Sheamus, of course, is from Ireland. Cesaro's from Switzerland. We'll talk about all the things they miss about home. We got road stories, airport stories, hotel stories, Japan stories. That's where we are when we did this. We're not going to talk about the crazy trip back to Ireland that Sheamus recently took to attend his sister's wedding and how he had to fly straight back to do a WWE pay-per-view.
Talk is Jericho.
Here we go. We're here. We're on.
Oh, it's a crack.
All right. We're cracking here in Tokyo, Japan. So
Tokyo, Japan with three different accents.
A Canadian, an Irishman, and a Swiss walk into a hotel room and do a podcast.
Drink a lot of coffee.
But this is good. We're able to work this out. And you were telling us a story, Claudio. Where did you go today?
I had lunch with Masahiro Chono.
That's crazy.
At a Brazilian steakhouse in Japan.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so a Swiss man and Japanese guy.
In the Brazilian steakhouse. Have you ever met him before?
I've never met him before, no.
He's obviously a legendary guy.
He is absolutely a legend.
How'd you get hooked up on him?
So a buddy of mine that I've known here for like 7 years since my Noah days was like, he knows Chono, and he brought me to his like clothing store where I got a lot of stuff before.
Aristrist or something?
Aristrist, yeah.
Which, thanks for the invite, man. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. You had to go to see your Irish George at the embassy.
I didn't go to see. He didn't turn up. He got stuck in traffic.
Oh, yeah.
You guys got so many friends. I feel like a loser. I'm just sitting here by myself in bed all day trying to find somebody to talk to.
Well, you know, his friend didn't show up. So, you know.
I can't believe he didn't invite me. You're a bollocks.
So I worked with Chono in WCW.
WCW, right?
Yeah, and it was... Well, it wasn't bad. It was kind of a disaster, but it wasn't bad. And the reason why was it was one of those ones where they wanted me to get my leg stuck in the rope. You know, when you fall the rope and you get like tied up in the ropes.
Is that Johnny Ace spot?
It was the Johnny Ace.
Because guess what? Yeah, I remember Johnny Ace was trying to get Wade Barrett to do the same thing with Dean Ambrose. And Wade's like, no, mate, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. And it's like, and Johnny's like, oh, it's going to be the greatest. I can't even do the voice, but
it's going to be great. It's going to be great.
Wade's like, I'm not effing doing that.
But it hurts. The ropes aren't loose enough. Yep. Like you have to loosen the ropes to get your leg caught in it, but it still feels like it's going to break your shin.
Yeah.
And so it was like it was the dumbest idea ever, and that's the only recollection I have of working with one of the greatest of all time. Except it was on a really shitty pay-per-view for WCW.
What was the pay-per-view?
Like Sold Out.
Sold Out.
But it was spelled S-O-U-L-D. Yeah. Sold Out. So how many times have you been to Japan, Claudio?
I was trying to think. This must be my 8th or 9th time, maybe.
Okay, because you went a lot for
Noah. Like I did like maybe 4 or 5 tours with Noah, and then I came in with WWE. This must be my 4th time, probably. Same. Yeah, how about maybe only my 3rd, maybe.
Third time. We worked here before.
We did, yeah.
2 years ago or something like that, which was really good.
I worked Big Tony as well. I brought you over here. And I actually worked in the tag match, too, didn't I? Or was I tagging with you?
With me and you versus Cena and Yoshitatsu.
Me and him knocked the piss out of each other, actually, about 3 years ago before I tore my shoulder.
I think that's every match.
Well, that's funny.
Especially in Japan.
Because we have you guys here. Obviously, you're a big tag team now. But it started out, the reason that you guys do in your best of seven match, how did that even start? the best of nine match?
Well, how did that start? Well, we were both kind of floundering, and I was
started with the draft,
and I was downward spiraling, and then it was just like, oh, it's a Jamie and Cesaro wrestle, and then The draft, yeah.
It all started with the draft, actually. Started after the draft, yeah.
So the draft comes.
Well, it was weird because, like what happened was, you know, Tony came back from the injury on fire, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not just saying this because you hear it, but, like, you watch it. To me, it was the most innovative comeback, the most exciting comeback.
I remember. It was
like all over the Kip. He's like bleeding, like Super Mario. He
came back for the four-way after WrestleMania. AJ, Kevin, maybe?
Kevin, yeah.
Yeah. He came back with the new outfit and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So he came back.
Yeah, so, you know what I mean? Like, as I said, like, he came back and he was, like, flying all over. Like, he was hitting uppercuts, jumping out of the ring, uppercuts against the barrier. Like, he came back on fire. I was coming off that League of Nations thing after being world champ. And then we did the draft, you know? And then we were the second last and last pick. And I remember sitting there, and when the draft was going on, thinking, am I even going to be drafted on TV? I was like, this is absolute bullshit.
That day, Chris.
Did we?
Yes, we did. Remember?
Single match?
Yeah, we had a single match.
Oh, it was like just like a 5-minute thing or something.
Yeah,
right?
when we said we're going to make that the best 4-minute match ever.
That's right. And we tried. Yeah, we did have a really good 4-minute match. It was one of those ones where it was the draft, which in the backdrop was, well, they throw some matches in there.
Yeah.
And they threw us in there, which we had worked countless times on live events.
But they
gave us like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was like, let's just do the absolute best 5-minute match of all time. Because we based it on that Owen Hart 1-2-3 Kid match, X-Pac. Yeah. So, yeah, I remember that. So we worked the match. So you guys were wondering, if you were even going to get drafted on TV?
We were like, we had no idea. Like, it was crazy. And then all of a sudden, you were second last.
I was second last. You were last. Yeah, something like that.
So something that I want people to know is that it's a real shoot. We don't know when we're getting drafted.
We didn't know. Yeah. And, like, I remember walking up for the match, and you just got drafted, and I didn't. I just was like, it was just, I was like, I think it was like currently in the ring, you know, Cesaro, you know, like I have one of those.
You're like, during the break.
Yeah, well, you know, so it's like we come up with, like, I don't know, currently in the ring, Cesaro, by the way, he hasn't been drafted yet. And here is Chris Jericho.
I don't know, geez, you haven't been drafted yet? You suck. You're a loser. Okay, so you're sitting there waiting, finally.
Yeah, so we finally get through, and then I did an interview on whatever, Talk and Smack, or
whatever it's called. Yeah, Aftershock or whatever.
Aftershock, yeah. And then he did one, Tony did one in the backstage area, and we're all pissed, man. Like, because we know our worth, we know how good we are, and in our own minds, like, we're the best, as far as I'm concerned, but... then it was one of those instances where I think it was like they didn't know what to do with us. They're like, you know what? These two are two hard-hitting guys, you know what I mean? Two foreigners. Let's just put them in the best of seven match. But that was after we wrestled twice.
No. That was not... Then we just wrestled twice. And then afterwards, Foley was like, I'm going to put you in the best of seven. And that's you know, it's like, oh, we just wrestled twice. And now we've wrestled seven more times. And then I was like, all right, let's kick it off. SummerSlam, right? Sweet. And then we're a kickoff show. So we were...
Before the pay-per-view.
So we were just like, all right, let's freaking... Like, we were both kind of... chip on our shoulder, had something to prove, and we were like, let's do the best thing ever. And I think I did a huge crossbody of those new posts and stuff, and I was just like, screw it, I'm just gonna
just go for it. You can, because it was also too, it was best of seven for nothing at stake.
Yeah
that was just made it hard for you guys as
difficult.
Well
but then we were like, all right, let's show everybody. And we had, every match was different. We got to do, which I'm really proud of, we got to do one of the matches on a live event in London. Because it was like sold out O2 when we did the world. It was legit the world.
That's OLD.
We did Kansas City. We did Kansas City Raw. We did London, London, England. The O2. We did Manila, Shanghai, and then went right back. So
it was the worst trip ever.
It was like, on that trip, by the way, I calculated. I counted it. We spent more time on a plane than in the countries together.
Really?
Because between... getting on a plane, waiting an hour till we take off, then taking off. Like, we were more time on a plane.
I remember it was 40 hours out of 120 hours. Yeah. And you take sleep out of that.
That was flying, though.
Flying time,
So it was almost like we were on planes for like 50, you know? And then
okay, there you go. Yeah.
You know, and then take like airport.
And let me tell everybody who's listening. So we flew from Raw in Kansas City to London, England.
Through New York.
Through New York. Did a show in London. Flew
that
to
night.
Manila, Philippines. Right. Yeah. Did a show that night. Right after the show.
Went to the airport.
Straight to the airport.
Wait, no. Actually, we had 2 hours at the hotel.
No. Before the show.
Oh, before the show, we had 2 hours.
Once the show ended, we went straight to the airport. I remember asking a question. And they said, oh, Vince said the guys will rather just go straight to the airport. It's like, no, we wouldn't. I started talking about this yesterday. I vividly remember you and me, Claudio, sitting in that shitty little airport lounge in the Philippines talking about music or something. And just now we're really starting to get messed up on the jet lag and just sitting there like a couple morons. And then we fly straight from Manila
to Shanghai.
Get in, Work that night, leave the next day.
Leave the next day. And then on the way back, I watched, I downloaded 9 episodes of Game of Thrones because I was just catching up at that point. I was like, 9 hours will be enough for an 11-hour flight. No, it wasn't.
It wasn't.
No, it wasn't. Because it was like we stood on the runway for an hour.
Oh,
so
geez.
Like with like 3 hours left on the plane, I was like, what am I going to do? I'm all jacked up on Game of Thrones.
That's when I remember Punk's fight was that day. And I was so loaded because we were like we were so drunk and jet lagged. I remember watching the fight, and then I woke up the next day or on the plane, and I thought it was a dream. It's like I had a dream that CM Punk lost in a minute. It's like, no, that really happened. Really,
we were all stood around like there's like 15 guys
on someone's phone.
On the way down to the plane.
So you guys have your live match on the live event,
And then like they replayed it the following day on Raw because we had like a camera, like a professional camera there that took footage, which I thought was really cool because that doesn't really happen anymore.
Yeah.
And then we finally have the 7th match and people
Indianapolis. Yeah. What was the pay-per-view? Payback or something
like that. And again, it's for nothing. But then like people actually like it ends with a double count out again. Like, all right, another stone
but
throw.
But the people were so
and
into
then,
the man.
The people were so into
that,
it. They were like, let him fight. Like we, so it was like, wow, all right, like we kind of turned that around, and then Foley made us a team, and
hold on. But here's the thing about this, though. First, like what you mentioned before, Shane, but you guys were kind of floundering, whatever. And I watched every one of those matches, and each one of them got better than the last, which is hard in a best of seven, especially when there's nothing at stake. You guys were both kind of heels, or both
I was heel. He was
okay,
babyface.
Gotcha.
But the funny thing was, there was a lot of really cool stuff in there, And like, it was, to me, it was we knew what we were at, man. We're just trying to like, we're getting everyone to notice, you know what I mean? And we remind people how good we are and how realistic we are in there. Because literally, like, we literally kicked the shit out of each other. Like, I'm not joking. He uppercutted me one time, and I actually felt my jaw. I thought my jaw was going through the roof, of my head. That's how physical it was. Like,
yeah, that's probably
Jesus
Christ.
I also remember, though, like one time, like he came at me and I basically vaulted him into the post,
you
right?
You backdropped him into the post. Isn't that it?
Yeah. And, Bret Hart, like he was grand. Bret Hart goes on, like ranting on about, oh man, Sheamus is so insane. And he's this after the spot. And I was like, let's go. We got Bret Hart. It was great.
It was probably your spot, though, Claudio,
was,
I imagine, right? I remember that. You launched him straight into the post.
It was amazing.
How is that unsafe? How are you unsafe in doing it? You didn't make him do it. It's a backdrop. You have to go for it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But like every match just got better and better. And as I said, Indianapolis was unbelievable. Like it just
great match. I remember
it just kept getting better and better and better. He almost killed himself with that planche through the rope.
That's the last dive I ever done. By the way,
remember I told you after, don't ever do that again.
And you're too big to do that.
Yeah,
I look at you. I was like, yep.
That scared the shit out of me, man.
You went for the dive, but you kind of just
stopped short. I have a bald head that gets sweaty, so I think I just slipped off, and then I landed. And I was like, all right, don't do that one again. It was like one of those, like, I immediately knew it. I was like, popped up and like, okay.
Yeah, it's so bad that you don't even sell it. That's when you know that you've scared yourself when you don't even sell it. You just get right back up again.
All right, cool.
Because we talked about it. I was like, dude, you're too big to do dives. Don't do dives. And then you did that dive, and it's like, oh my gosh, I hope he's alive.
And like, I was even thinking, it was one of those, I was like, oh, I'm running. I put my hands up front. I was like, oh, well, like this is me having a conversation in my head during the 2 seconds it takes to run the ropes. I was like, oh, this is going to be a great dive. I'm going to get as much speed as I can. All right, hands up front. Now, what would be cool? If I wouldn't put my hands up front, just a straight headbutt. This is going to be great. I was thinking Black Warrior. Like, this is going to be my Black Warrior dive.
He had zero thought for me about how any of this is going to end up with me. You know what I'm saying? It was great.
I was like, Shane is out there.
No, Shane would be grand. I can hit him in the head with anything. But like, that's what it was. But that's what you do, Like when you've got a point to prove and you're trying to prove yourself and make people remember how good you are, they're the risks you take, Like it's, you just keep trying to push the bar further and further and further. Hence is why we are the bar. You know what I mean? That's really why we are, because if we don't set the bar, we are the bar.
That's like,
why are you laughing to himself?
Good segue.
It's great, right?
Fit your catchphrase in there.
By the way, merch have made loads. WWE Shop have basically, they're spinning out the shirts now for the bar. They're like, they're coming to us every day with all these ideas. They're so excited about that's a lie.
Let me say this. Don't forget, this is a company that had a line of scarves last year.
Yeah.
And not one of them was a Chris Jericho scarf. There's a Dean Ambrose scarf and a John Cena scarf and a Rollins scarf. Like, that is the worst no-brainer stupid thing I've ever heard in my life.
They baffle me, man. They really baffle me
sometimes, right?
But when they bring something out, it's like it's already over. You know what I mean? Like something good hits, and then it's like the t-shirt comes out like 6 months. He just got an arm sleeve, or what? What you get the other day that you had? You've been pushing for ages.
I got new Cesaro arm sleeves that you can get now.
Which you've been wearing for a year.
So Foley made us a team, and it's funny because we really kind of grew together, like, as a team. Mm-hmm. And obviously inside and outside of the ring, because it's legit, like he said, it's always, we always try to push each other. And like, even we both remember the times when, you know, like, oh, you have 4 minutes and we don't really care what you do anyway. Mm-hmm. So like, we still have that same.
Were you guys like friends before? I mean, obviously we're all friends, but were you guys tight at all? Did you really know each other? Or?
Not really. Yeah. No, not at all.
Bars, I mean, come over a couple of times. Yeah, I don't think he knew about it. I was just trying to get the rub off. You know what I mean?
What? To rub off? Getting the rub off?
I didn't understand what the rub off means, or getting the rub means. But we were, no, I mean, like, we have a lot of respect for each other. I don't think we were super... super close running, you know, both Europeans. We came kind of same background, get here, but we definitely, from wrestling each other enough, we definitely had a lot of respect, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And it was definitely, I think there's always been a competition here between us, because, and that's a great thing, because you always want to try and, you know, outdo each
other. One up each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we still do.
This is Talk is Jericho.
What kind of feedback did you guys get on the Best of Seven?
It was mostly positive. You know, I feel like you can always tell when you start something and it was just kind of us doing it, and then all of a sudden it was like, I've got some ideas here for you.
Mm-hmm.
So it was mostly positive, and you know, you can tell because we got more and more time for our matches. Mm. Because even when we only had little time, we try to make this memorable, like with the backdrop or something that people still remember. Like, and then okay, that fits in here with the story, and then we got more and more, and we got to talk, you know, in the backstage with Foley after that, which is very important, and just mm-hmm. trying to be able to get our characters known to people, because I mean, we feed off each other really well. And then especially when we had that, it was like, hey, you guys are in the back here arguing, and they're like, okay, go. And then we would just go for 5 minutes, and they were like, you guys can stop. And we're like, oh, okay. So it's like, you know, because we just like, that's what we do. And it just came off really organic, and that's how we kind of knew, like, we got something here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very organic. The funnest part, I mean, it's been a whole lot of fun. It's definitely been an evolution, like, from when we started. But even when we're tagging, there was that thing of, like, the odd couple kind of fighting each other. And we wanted to push in that. We didn't get the opportunity to push in that as much as we wanted, because it's like, you know, you have a segment and it's taken away, you know what I mean? So, like, mm-hmm. and people were enjoying it. And then I guess we did the segment in... wasn't in Glasgow, somewhere else after winning the titles, and we were still kind of arguing, and then we just kind of got reamed out because we're supposed to be on the same page at that stage. So
and no one tells you until after.
Well, it's just we're enjoying it, we're having fun doing it, and the crowd are having fun, you know.
Yeah.
Boo yay, the boo yay. Remember the boo yay stuff is, I mean, great.
We just try to push the envelope with whatever we got, you know. And I was like, okay, I'm every single time, and the same with him. Like if you give, like, we just try to, okay, we have 4 minutes, and we're going to make this 4 minutes mm-hmm. the greatest 4 minutes ever. And I think that's what you have to do. It was the same with our promos and with our segments, like with the bar fight and stuff like that. And we're just like,
that was great.
Let's go as crazy as we can, you know.
But it's funny how it works, though, because I remember when you guys first were put as a team, it was a little bit of a controversy. It's like, these guys work at Best of Seven, then it ends in a draw, and then they just stick them in a team together. But now here we are a year later, and it's like, it was actually a really great idea.
Well, it's crazy how, if you look at it, this is a year in the making. So it's mm-hmm. like a story that's been going on for over a year you can follow, and it's so much, I mean, to me, it's still a lot of fun, and there's still a lot of legs that you can work with. A lot of legs that we can do. I don't know if that's English, but, you know, I just pretend it is.
You speak five languages.
Yeah, like, okay. Hey.
There's a lot of legs still left. Yeah. We're really enjoying it. I mean,
like,
it's
a caterpillar.
Yeah.
We're the centipede.
Oh, yeah.
The
caterpillar, centipede. Yeah, same thing. Just talk about, you know. Yeah,
so, like, it's interesting, too, like, when you're used to being a singles guy, and then you start doing exclusively tags, there's always an adjustment period, right?
Yes.
And then when you do tags all the time and you go to singles, there's an adjustment period again, right? Mm. But when you become a team, like was it a natural thing? Did you have the chemistry right away?
I
reamed out with that first match. Remember that against the locals?
I don't remember.
I haven't been too honest in this interview. Maybe.
No, I remember. Yeah, you guys worked a couple job guys.
We were told we didn't sell and all that sort of stuff. I'm really, this is, I don't know.
But why were you supposed to sell if they're locals? Or did you get in trouble for giving them too much? There's some trouble from something.
I don't. I'll just comment on this. I opened the can of worms. It was just a situation where it just, you know, we went in, battered the crap out of each other the day before, and we went in, and it was more of an adjustment thing, Chris. You know what I mean? It was more like, you know, I don't know, where we try to one up each other, and then we went through the same thing. But it was convoluted story.
Yeah, I got you.
We got back on track anyway. The next week, we got back on track, and then was off to the races. Then, you know what I mean? And then we started going in against the New Day, and it was a great build up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we finally beat them after they held the titles for the longest. Time.
We also won the Survivor Series.
Actually, that was the Survivor Series too.
Another one. Are you all your team or just you?
Yeah, our team. Well, our team. We won it for our team.
But see, that's another thing. Like when I first started tagging with Big Show, our first tag match was awful. I remember because we were trying all this stuff. Like, okay, like you throw me in the air and you slam me, and it's like we realize like that's not the type of team that we are.
Yeah.
That's not working. Yeah. But the first time, I still laugh. Like that was terrible. Like, dude, we're done, you know, but there is an adjustment just to get to know each other, what the characters are, how you work as a team, etc.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it was really the first match. I guess it was an adjustment period, like, because we were still definitely in the single mindset, like, straight away. So I think we hit it off pretty quick. Like, once we got through that first match, there was kind of a cluster, you know what I mean? It was just then we're off to the races, and we just started gelling, you know what I mean? And then we started working together and coming up with stuff that we could do together and work as a unit, you know?
And that was the other fun part. Like, that was okay. We had that whole story and time from like, okay, we're the odd, like, we don't like each other to people could see us growing together as a team. It wasn't just like, and here's the new tag team of
Sure.
They do buckle, you know, double back elbows, double lip high five. You know what I mean? It was like, no, you could see us from like just being just two.
There
two
was a reason
guys,
for it, yeah.
Two singles guys, and like that was legit. Like how we grew together from, you know, doing that to now being a wild old machine. That was actually all a natural progression. But people were able to witness that. Like it wasn't like, oh, you know, me and Sheamus went down to FSW and like, you know, like did like tag moves and practice stuff in the ring.
Right.
You were like people were there and they can see it, us becoming a better team. And I think that's why the response is there to us, because they were there and watched the whole time.
They grew up with us,
you know, so, 15 years ago.
Too. It was great crack though. Like he did a perfect uppercut and they go, yay, I tagged myself in. And he uppercut the shitty go, uppercut. Boo. And Stoney would say
they hated uppercut. You for the longest time.
Oh my God. I, you know what I mean? And then like I tagged myself in on Tony and he, you know what I mean? They booed the crap out of me.
You had fun with that. You
know, it was great crack. Like, cause that's what we were, isn't that what we work for? Like the reaction to the crowd when they get involved and they're just we're having as much fun as them. You know what I mean? I've done some stuff in there that had a Tony cringe. You know what I mean? It was great. You know, it's great.
It's so much fun because we could, you know, we would work. Like Sheamus was the heel and the back end, the good guy, and it just worked. There was a time when we worked, you know, against Gallows and Anderson and against New Day at the same time, and it just worked because
you
of our chemistry. This is great. And then, you know, like we had the whole thing with New Day, and then like it gave us a different dynamic, and it's, you know,
let's talk about the reinvention too, because you did it too, Sheamus. But let's go back to what you were talking about, Cesaro, when you came back after your injury and you had the tearaway suit and the shades. What was the idea behind that?
Well, the idea behind that was like, hey, I've been out for 4 months. You need to come back with something that's kind of different, you know? And then being a big James Bond fan and watching a lot of Bond stuff when I was hurt. And two, like, you know, they've been calling me the Swiss Superman on commentary. And I was like, well, you know, I kind of dressed like Clark Kent when I'm out of the ring, and I like my suits and my European.
Yeah, you were very
clothes.
Well dressed. Yeah.
So I was like, oh, you know what? What if I freaking rip that off? And then here I am, Super Cesaro, when I walk to the ring. You know, and I was like, oh, that's cool. And I made my first two or three tearaway suits myself.
Did you?
While I was hurt. Yeah.
How do you do it?
I used to make
Swiss
more
Army knife.
Swiss Army knife.
Velcro.
Velcro. Wine and vinegar.
And some vodka.
Vodka. I mean, I used to make my own ring gear back on the indies. And even the first couple of times here in WWE.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it looks spectacular too. You should check it out. Yeah, it's very jealous of that.
So, yeah. So I made the tearaway suit. And I mean, it had the desired effect for the time I had it.
Yeah.
And then like, again, there comes a time where you feel like, okay, I'm still not where I want to be. And if I just do the same thing over and over, I feel like, You know, and then, but then there always needs to be a reason. That was starting to team with Sheamus, and you can see once we start teaming, both of our looks changed and evolved, and now evolved to where it is now. And I feel it's just a natural progression. But I mean, you always want to evolve. I mean,
yeah, of course,
you know, like you're the master of that. You know, you always want to stay fresh and ahead of the curve, and that's just.
How about you, Sheamus, when you changed your hairstyle and got the mohawk? And you used to have the beard in beads in your beard, but that's gone now.
All the balls in your beard.
Yeah. I mean, like, that was a drastic change. Like, I think I talked to you about this before. It was like, I was at home, I tore my shoulder and it came back, and I had the same look, thinking, you know, like, I told you about that.
That's right.
Girls, I'm saying, I changed, but I'm not changing at all. And it was like, I came back and it was still kind of like, the first couple of weeks. And then it's just, you know what I mean? Before I left the first time, people were sick of it. I mean, I was sick of babyface Sheamus.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just because it's like, I said before, I was more of a bully as a babyface than I was as a heel, you know? And some of the stuff I was doing, I was like, what the, this is like, I'm bullying this fella, you know what I mean? Like, so anyway, I came back with the drastic hair and the beads. Love life went down the tubes probably for about a year and a half.
Not exactly. I mean, the girls didn't like it.
They were not impressed at all, mate. But I knew what I had to do. That was the whole point. I sacrificed that to do the character, and it was great, you know what I mean? The beads, like, people,
that's so
much,
was so
cheese.
Miserable, you know.
What,
that's why he was so miserable, you
know? No chicks.
I was angry all the time, no chicks. And but like, I took the, then eventually, you know, the beads came out, and then, like, you know, then we obviously, like, had the proper beard, and then we started going against each other in a mania. We evolved the looks, you know what I mean? We had an idea, and then we found out we're going to be in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, and then switched again, and people looked at me like those like two heads, and we talked to writers about it, like no, you're this tag team ladder matches, and then we're like, brilliant. You know what I mean? And then, so at that stage, then we kind of like, kilts are a Celtic thing, you know, Irish and Scottish, you know what I mean? That they're worn at weddings and stuff like that, especially Irish people get married with kilts. So I had the idea of the kilts with his suit jackets. To be honest with you, man, I don't think anyone looked better than we did at walking out of WrestleMania.
Was that this year, the tag team ladder?
No. Yeah, that was this year.
There was a tag team ladder match this year?
Yeah.
My gosh, at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I don't even remember that. That's just goes. Thanks, Chris. It goes to show
that's
how many matches.
We
no, but how many matches?
That's a memorable performance.
It's how much we travel and work and stuff. I had no idea who was in that. Remind me.
It was us, the club, Enzo and Cass, and then the Hardys were the surprise.
Oh, the Hardy surprise! Now I remember. Of course, I remember now. Yeah.
And we had the kilts, and we had both custom tearaway tops, and it was great.
It was cool. Just like, it was a cool moment.
What's the Swiss guy doing with a kilt on? How was that?
Well, he's teaming with an Irish guy, you know. That's to me, and like, but the look is, I got a lot of positive responses from it, you know,
because it looks cool. That's
it looks different, and it's like, okay, I mean, you need to be a real man to pull off a kilt, so
yeah.
That's what I say. Like, I mean, you don't want to see my Swiss garb out there, so I'm very happy Sheamus has the kilts, you know.
I'll give you an example. LAX Staples Center on the Monday, LAX Staples. No, we're more aware of the airports than we are the arenas at this stage.
Totally,
we travel so much.
Yeah.
But LA, like, I got in the ring, you know, when we're doing that thing with, we're just sitting on a bunch of stools or earpieces there with Drifter. Are we able to call him Drifter or not? Elias Sampson.
He's not called the Drifter anymore?
I don't know. Who
is
knows?
That the new thing?
But there he was. There, I look around the arena, and there's this bird, a couple of rows back, this giant sign. Sheamus is, or Cesaro is my daddy. I wish I said Sheamus. And there was Cesaro getting nothing at all red. And everything looked at him, big old red, bright red.
I think it says Cesaro is daddy, which I found out later through my friends, because I don't know what's cool enough. That daddy is now used as a verb or an adjective. So if somebody's like,
He's great,
Cesaro, or he's hot or whatever. So it's like, yeah, like, he's daddy, and I'm like, I didn't even know what that means. So here's me, Sheamus,
you're a sexual daddy.
So Sheamus is, you know, like, has tears.
You're her dirty daddy.
At me, and
you're
I'm
dirty
there,
naughty
I'm
daddy.
I guess. I mean, I don't know.
He's getting too flushing out.
To be fair, though, so here's how my thought process. It's like, okay, this is so backwards.
Big Tony.
If you would say somebody is hot, and you'd be like, oh, he's daddy, like, do you think of your dad when you think of somebody's hot? Like, that makes no sense at all. And then, if he would be a dude that would have a sign for a chick, would it say, like, I don't
she's
know, like she's mommy? And that would be even weirder. So I was like, what's going on?
Let's get into Mexican stuff, though. Hey, mommy. They call hot chicks mommy.
America's a weird place, mate.
Let's talk about that. Like, all three of us are foreigners to America.
Yeah.
What were some of the weird things that you noticed when you first came over here?
or there?
Well, when I first came over here, I lived in a place near a cornfield, and I was just like, first was like, oh, when I come to America, it's cool. I'm going to get a bike, and that's all I need. I won't need a car. I don't need anything.
Just like
I'll
a
just
bicycle?
Take a bike. Yeah, I just get a bicycle. Yeah, because, you know, that's what I need in Europe. I drove my bike everywhere. Like, you don't need anything. And then I was there for 2 days. I'm like, I can't even, like, the nearest grocery store is like a 50-minute drive. Like, I'm screwed. I need a car. Like, so just like little things like that.
You're living in the cornfield.
Yes.
You're living in a cornfield.
Well, why are you living in a cornfield?
So because when I moved
fiber,
over here,
right? We all need fiber.
I lived with my roommate was Cassius Ohno, aka Chris Hero, aka Cassius Ohno. That's the NXT.
Okay.
Aka living in a cornfield, and we just got like a very cheap house.
Where
that was in Reading, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
And it was in the very outskirts of Reading, Pennsylvania. You know, which is kind of. So there
Amish
was just like
town,
Amish towns and stuff. Yeah. So like there was legit our behind our house 4 feet was a huge cornfield.
Was there any children in there?
So there was many times where you're home and it's like, okay, it's the closest neighbor that was a landlord is legit a 5-minute walk. Mm-hmm. So I'm just here, and I just hope that, like, I was like, oh, like everyone was like, oh, you watch horror movies? I'm like, hell no, because I'm in my room,
one.
Like, Jesus Christ, what's going on here? What's going on? I'm like, when I came over here, I lived in the cornfield, and I was like, oh yeah, there's nothing, and I have to drive everywhere. So that was a big cultural difference, obviously.
You're thinking like, well, America is like the land of milk and honey, big place, skyscrapers, and it's worse than Switzerland. As far as like living in the middle of nowhere.
Well, in Switzerland, if you live in even if you live in the middle of nowhere, there's like a bus or a car or something that picks you up. So.
What you
saying? Even saying that, I lived in Tampa. Like we were all stayed at Camden Bayside, which is probably about a 5-minute drive from it was the FCW Arena at the time. And but still, like if you didn't have a car, you're screwed because you still have to walk everywhere. It doesn't mean even if you're not in the cornfield. Like I remember I remember one time there was a Sweet Bay, probably about half an hour walk, and. I got down there and people are running out of the Sweet Bay with like bottles, like gallons of water and food. Like people were in serious panic. I'm like, what's going on? Goes, there's a hurricane coming. There's a hurricane coming. And no hurricane came, but like, it just shows you that like the mentality of people down there. I think
just the fact that, that happens too. Because I've been down in Tampa for 10, 15 years, whatever it is. And every year they'll be like, the sky is falling. This is going to be the worst hurricane of our generation, and people go board up their houses and they get all the water, and then every time the last minute the hurricane blows away and goes somewhere else.
It's like
in Ireland
if that was the case, it'd be like, Jesus, Mick, we've half a gallon of milk in the fridge and we have a bottle of water, we'll be grand, we got a load of biscuits there, it'll be fine for 5 days.
It'll be a crack.
Listen, as long as you got Guinness and whiskey, we're grand. That's an Irish mentality.
I just did some shows in Ireland and learned what crack means. It's like, it's a good time, right?
Good time.
It's
great
a
time.
Crack.
Oh, we had a ride along that we just took. It just was like Seamus just came back from his sister's wedding, and he didn't. So he flew back, from Irish morning to American afternoon. Came to the pay per view where we had the cage match. Did the cage match, and then afterwards we had ride along taping,
which means
Seamus was awake for 24 hours at this point,
right.
And he was just in Ireland, so he was spitting up those Irish words like it was nothing. And I had no clue what he was talking about half the time. He was like, of time a kip over here, and I'm like, what? He was like,
get a kip in.
That's a
nice Barnett.
Yeah, so we I went back for the wedding, and I was supposed to be back for 10 days, but then obviously the pay-per-view came up, so I literally went to sister's wedding, load of shenanigans, everyone's just locked, but before the wedding.
And we drink and we fight and we drink and we fight and we fight and we drink. Yeah. That's Ireland. Every song.
Lads dropping their bags, their pants on the dance floor, women just taking their boobs out in front of the DJ. I'm Jeez. Like, I was horrified. This is Ireland. What the fuck going on?
Aunt May, what are you doing?
Jesus, yeah. It was rough. It was rough.
And Molly Maguire over there.
I had to fly straight to DC. Lenny, Lenny is a guy for United. He looks after us. He met me on the plane.
Shout out to Lenny.
Shout out to Lenny. He got me off the plane because we went through customs in Ireland. Jumped off the plane, jumped the car, straight to the rental car place, and then drove an hour and a half down to Baltimore and then met the lads and then had the match. And then they said, 3-hour ride along there, yeah?
Oh, jeez. And that's the thing, too, that people don't know. Like that time when we went and did all that trip to China and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I remember at the end of the trip, because like, we land, like even yesterday in Singapore, we're flying 24 hours, then we get in.
24 hours. It was 24 hours, right?
Basically.
Yeah.
And you guys got in at like noon. I got in at 9 or whatever. You get to the hotel for 2 hours and go straight to work.
Yeah.
What other job in the world would you have that? Right? Like, yeah. If you're an athlete, if you're coming here to be an actor or whatever, there is no way you would land and go straight to set or to work. You know what I mean? That's one of the things that I don't think people really understand about our traveling.
Well, even people are like, oh, you work one day a week, right? That's Monday when we see you on TV. You know, like, yeah, no, not really.
It doesn't work that way. I remember when we landed that one time from China, though, and we had to go to Baltimore, as a matter of fact. We went through Detroit, and you get your bags, you go through customs, and then you walk, and to the right is the connection.
Yeah.
And to the left is the exit from the airport. And I remember I was walking out. I just stood there for 2 seconds. I'm like, I can't take it anymore. I'm leaving. And I just took a left and walked out. And I remember Gallo's going, Chris. I didn't even answer. I just walked out. I got in the cab. I went, take me to the closest, nicest hotel that you can find. And then I just sat in the room for like, 12 hours and then bought my own flight to go to Baltimore the next day. But like, you just sometimes you just can't take it about all the travel we do.
It was mental.
Like, yeah.
Like we did, just for example, for one normal week, we did, went to Tampa, to Denver, to Edmonton, clear customs, Edmonton to Calgary, 3-hour drive show. Then we took a 5 a.m. flight from Calgary to St. Louis, through Minneapolis, and then a 160-mile drive to Springfield, Illinois, and then a 230-mile back drive back to Evansville, Indiana, for Raw.
Kidding me?
No. that's not even leaving the continent, kind of, you know what I mean?
That's like 15 hours of travel just within one time zone.
We are professional travelers, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
That's what Alice Cooper said. He said, they don't pay me for the show. They pay me for the travel. 23 hours it takes to get there. And that makes perfect sense.
100%, yeah.
Talk is Jericho.
So what do you, when we're over in the States, obviously all three of us live there now. You go back to your home from time to time. What do you miss most about Ireland?
You know, I just went back twice in a month there. I went back actually after Evansville thing. Same thing with you, where you like, you got off the plane. I literally Monday night after Evansville, after all that loop, and because the time went back the first time was quite short, I literally sat in my room. You know what? After 5 days off, screw this, I'm going back to Ireland.
Really? Just that moment decided?
Just decided. So I flew back to Tampa, repacked my
bag. I thought you were in a locker room undecided, says you're going to go home, and a certain person told you, no, go back to Ireland, it's going to be grand.
Yeah, but I hadn't made up my mind totally. That was like a couple of hours before I got to the room, but like,
that was you that said that? Okay.
He was like, I don't know if I should. I'm like, go back to Ireland, it's going to be great.
It's going to be grand.
It's going to be grand.
Okay, so you decide last minute to go back to Ireland.
Yeah, I went back, had an absolute blast. I just feel like when I came over the first time, first couple of years, obviously you didn't miss it that much because, it's a new experience for you over here and you just want to keep working. And now the last year or so, I definitely miss it, especially after the wedding and everything, getting to see everybody, you know what I mean? It's just, I miss that aspect. Like, people don't realize, you give up a lot when you leave your country. Like all my family there, friends there. It's an unbelievable life. Like, don't get me wrong, it's great, it's fantastic. But there is that part where you after a while you just go, you know what I mean? I need to get back more and see everybody. And I had a blast. I don't regret. Like, I literally went from Dublin to LA, from LA straight to Hong Kong and Singapore. But for me, it was well worth it.
So what do you do when you go back to, like, for me, when I go back to Winnipeg, there's a pizza place there called DJ's Restaurant, and I always go and get a pizza. There's actually a pizza called the Chris Jericho, but that's my go.
Nice.
What is on the Chris Jericho?
It's a pepperoni and ground beef.
Oh, right.
And the reason why is I've been eating this. It's right by my house. And I've been eating there since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I even worked there for a while. And I always ordered pepperoni and ground beef. Then when I became, quote unquote famous, the Jericho pizza.
That's awesome.
But I always go back to DJ's Pizza no matter what. Even if I'm there for 5 hours, I'll make sure to eat lunch there. Is there something like that for you?
Bruxelles, man. Best pint of Guinness in Dublin. I think you've been there. That's the one with the Phil Innes.
Oh, with the Phil Innes statue.
Phil Innes outside. I had my first pint in there when I was 15. Which is illegal.
I was supposed to say, is that late for an Irishman or is that early? I don't know.
Pretty illegal. I think I had the worst idea as well. Like, you go in at 7 o'clock, you'd have 2 pints and he'd be locked and he'd be on getting the last bus home, you know what I mean? But it was great. I have so many great memories. My dad used to drink there when he was a teenager. So, and I worked on the door there for years,
We're doing opening and closing for people.
Sing songs with a hat in front of you.
Actually, I sing more now. It was so funny with, what's his name?
Ed Sheeran.
No, not Ed Sheeran. Please.
What's his? No.
Matthew McConaughey came in one day. He was filming that thing, Rain of Fire. He just walked in. Like that's the type of that type of bar it is.
Did
like,
you say Bono was there one time too?
Bono went to school in there. Yeah.
Michael Flatley was there too. He told me all about it.
The Lord of the Dance. What's the attitude for you two if you're from Ireland? Is it like, oh my God, it's just like whatever? Like, do you, is Irish people have the same respect for you two as the rest of the world?
They have respect, definitely have respect for you two, but it's not like, you know, he's around a lot. You'll see him in Doyle's bar. There's a couple other bars he's at. Like, he's just
a bloke at that point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, honestly, mate, like, Ireland has changed. Used to be a time when, like, celebrities would go to different countries, whatever, you know, and especially in America, they'd be chasing them. But in Ireland, never really was that until camera phones came out. Like I remember Johnny Cash walking around Grafton Street. You know what I mean? Like, he had the big hat on, just looking for attention. But people were like, oh, how's it going? How are you doing? Like, people didn't give a bollocks. But like now, I feel like with the camera phones, it's like. And we just, I don't know who he is. I don't know what he was. I'm going to take a picture anyway because I just feel like I have to take a picture.
But that's what Ozzy said. There's no commitment anymore. Like when you were a kid or when you're younger, if you wanted to take a picture with somebody, you'd have to go put your camera in your bag or in your pocket and hopefully meet up. Now, there's no commitment. Like you said, I got my camera. I'll take, hey, who are you? My kid knows you, but I don't have a clue who you are. Can I take a picture?
Yeah. Who are you?
Yeah. Why do you want a picture with me if you don't know me?
Exactly.
Why would you want that? You know?
It's like, I don't know who you are, but to get a picture anyway. I'm like, oh,
so let me get this straight. You're asking me to do you a favor and wrapping it inside of an insult. The answer is no. Get out of here. Go away. You know?
Yeah, I don't really know who you are.
I love when you say yeah, and then they take the camera out there, and it's like they look like at the camera as if it's some sort of alien technology totally. That they've never used before in their entire life.
How many times have you had a guy take a selfie and he doesn't turn the camera around and make it look like a selfie? You see that thing that you're looking at? That's not us. That's a live picture. It's looking at the wall. Can you turn that around?
Take another one. It was blurry.
Yeah. I don't know how to do this. Really, you know what I do? I just do it myself. I take it.
I just do the exact same thing.
Let me do it for you. Boom. Right. What do you miss about Switzerland?
It's so hard because
yodeling.
Yeah, yodeling. I miss yodeling a lot. Actually, I've almost sent this to you. Right now in Switzerland, it's going all the Eidgenössisches Jodelfest, like the big Jodelfest going on in Switzerland.
What are you doing here? They had a
trailer where they like yodel a freaking pop song, and it was amazing. I wish I would have showed it to you.
We did the early media day where they took us. Where were we? We're in
Lafayette, Louisiana.
They took us like 100 miles away to some small town that we didn't even know existed to do with media. Like literally had like no break. Right, it was like about 8 hours of media right before the show. And we're just making stuff up the whole time. I was like, tell us about your story. I was like, yeah, you know, Cesaro dreamt of being a yodeler, the Switzerland's top yodeler.
Yeah, and Switzerland's top yodeler. I think I just missed
Jake's crotch for tonight. That's excited he is.
Yeah, he mentioned that many times.
I was proud that you did it.
I know,
you're,
right?
You're a hairy bastard. You know what I mean?
European
at least the crotch is fit. You know what I mean?
He just recently shaved your crotch? Is that what you just said?
Well, that's what he told every single person that would listen to the radio. Yes, because he got a kick out of that. I think I just yeah. Hey, whatever. Hey, dude, it got people to the
arena, all the diseases, arrows, freshly shaven crotch.
Oh my God. You know what you guys remind me of a lot of? It's like the relationship that I have with Lance Storm. Super nice guy, but really straight laced, and would get embarrassed if I said, "Did you shave your crotch today?"
What are you talking about? I would never do that. Why would you say that? Maybe I did, maybe I didn't. It's none of your business.
But you're like me, you're like, "Hey, what's going on? Let's have a pint."
And I'd rather go have a protein shake.
So you go to have
boats.
Yeah, about and a half.
So you're talking about
it's all good. I think I miss like the way of life, I guess, and my friends and family. But like, then again, so when I hurt my shoulder, I went home for like 4 days, which is the longest I've been home since I joined WWE. So like for like 5-6 years, I wasn't home for more than a couple of hours, I did an interview the other day that I didn't really like first when I read it back, but then like it actually hit the nail on the point on a couple of things. Was the guy was just kind of like, well, you know, Cesaro is kind of like a foreign, like homesick Swiss guy that just misses all the like Swiss cliches because that's kind of all he remembers, and so he's kind of lost between two worlds. And I'm like, yeah, that's actually like first I was like, what do you mean? That's not true at all. I don't just miss cliches. I mean, and then I was like, well, actually, it's true because I've been away from my home for so long that like what I remember is what other people mostly probably think of as cliches because it's not some, like, except, you know, my family would
talk. Like, what are some Swiss cliches?
But you know what I mean? Like, for example, I miss just, like, getting up, taking the bus to, like, you know, downtown, be there in 20 minutes, just walk around, going from, you know, like, sitting at a restaurant, meeting some friends, and then going back. Like, I can't do that, you know. I'm at the lake, you know, to hang out and just swim for, like, you know.
Lucerne.
Where you hung out before, you know. I can just go there, play ball for a couple of hours, go to by the lake, and then, like, I can go skiing in the winter. And I just, like, that simplicity is just not there. I can go to the grocery store, and there's all the meat is labeled from, like, which city it's from, and it's, like, from, you know, 4 miles away. Oh, so okay. It's, like, yeah. All that, like, the little simple things like that is what I miss. And then, like, but I haven't been there in so long, but I still don't feel, like, at home in the United States for the most part. There's still some stuff is foreign to me. So it's, like, I'm kind of in between both worlds, and, yeah. It's just that weird feeling of, like, because, like, even when I go home, all my friends, like, we talk, same problems, same thing, same bullshit we talk about, having a great time, like, I never left, but I still don't quite belong anymore. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I
and
you.
It's
yeah,
like,
I got you.
But so, cliches are what make it real. Like, I'm the same Harden, like, because that's what the people go, hey, some
oh, I'm a big fan of cliches.
Yeah, but some prick in
that's
the
why Seamus eats potatoes
paper,
every like, day.
You know what I mean? Read the paper. What?
That's how you eat potatoes every day.
Yeah, I love potatoes. Yeah.
Chris says, hey.
Actually, I have at least two or three in my bag there for emergencies. You know what I mean?
You never know. Yeah.
You never know when you'll run out of potatoes.
So you said you're reading the paper?
No, but I'm just saying, like, for someone writing a paper who lives in the country, you don't appreciate the country you live in while you're living there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that is 100% true. That's 100% true.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's certain things you can appreciate, but you don't, because it's like every bleeding day. Like, every day you see the same thing. You take these things for granted. So when Cesaro says, like, you know, you come back and some prick writing a newspaper, you know what I mean? Like, I actually, that annoys me saying that, because it's true, because that's what the country is. You know what I mean? Like, they're the things that make the country great, and you don't realize that until you leave.
But that is 100% true. Like, I feel like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, I get more and more, like, patriotic and proud about Switzerland the longer I live away, and I'm sure it's the same with you in Canada. You're like, oh, Canada's the greatest country in the world. Let me buy this Canadian sweater that I would have not. Because, like now I was like, oh, this is a Swiss t-shirt, I'm going to buy that. And like, while you live, like, in Switzerland or Ireland or Canada, like, you would not, like, what are you walking around with a Swiss t-shirt, you freaking mark, you know? So it's like,
mark for Switzerland.
Yeah, you.
So like, mark for Switzerland.
But it's just like a difference, like, you learn to appreciate it. And
it's your identity, man.
It's your identity.
Well, and the thing is too, like, you know, if you mentioned going to see your old friends, and it happens to me when I go back to Winnipeg, and it's great seeing the boys, but like, there's still guys that will live there for the rest of their lives. They'll never leave Winnipeg. They'll never leave, you know, wherever you guys are from.
Yeah.
And that's the thing where it's like, I love the fact that we get to see the world. We're sitting here in Tokyo. I mean, look at this view, and just the fact we get to be here. Our mates might never come to Tokyo. They'll live in Winnipeg forever. And that makes me sad as well. You know, like, it's the happy medium, right?
And you can read, you know, okay, how can you talk with somebody and be like, yeah, I know, I was just on a 15-hour flight and it was terrible. And then I got there and there was, you know, 50 people waiting at the hotel to take pictures of me. I mean, how horrible is my life? You know, because all I wanted to do is go to the room and sleep, because I wanted to work out the next day. And I'm like, wait a second, like, you can't relate to that. And it's
but
like,
unless you know, like, we can relate to that.
Yeah.
Like, when I'm here and I'm like, 24 hours and 50 people waiting. If you say that to someone who doesn't do what we do, they'd be like, why didn't you sign for all of them? Why wouldn't you take a picture and autograph? Yeah. It's like, it doesn't work that way, you know?
Yeah, they're all selling them on eBay.
You know, yeah, right, exactly. But that's something too, like, you know, I haven't been on the road with you guys for a while, and coming back and just the camaraderie of the boys. Like, last night we went out with the brothers, and it's like, no one ever understands what we do except for us.
Yeah.
You know, and you can explain it and try, and whether it's your wife or your best friend or your father, they'll never quite get it the way that we get it, because we're here, you know?
No, I agree with that. I just think it's right. I stop myself too, because it's kind of human nature to complain sometimes, especially when you feel like you're on stop and you're trying to rationalize why you're so tired or you're burnt out, whatever. But then you realize, like, well, hang on a second. You know what I mean?
It's grand. It's grand, right, Seamus? Yeah, it's grand.
Like, what a great.
Yeah. It's grand.
I think, you know, it's much better than if we were, you know, digging ditches and we'd still be complaining.
Someone says digging ditches. I said it to someone the other day after all the travel. I said, when we made it back home, he goes, I said, you know, it could be digging ditches. And he goes, Jesus, but the sound of it, digging ditches sounds like it'd be easier.
But is that actually somebody's job? Yeah. Is there someone whose job it is to dig a ditch?
I'm 100% sure there is.
It must be somewhere, right?
Yeah. But it's cool, and it's just, you know, sometimes I feel like you need to rant, you know, first for Yeah, a couple minutes, get off your chest, and then it's like it's great because you know, like we said, we're here in Tokyo. You know,
people save up their money for years to come here,
and we're paid to be here. I'm extremely grateful. You know, doesn't mean I don't go on a rant every now and again.
Yeah, as we should. Yeah. Right, exactly.
I just came here for the prune candy.
And I actually had coffee jello today.
What?
Yes, they had coffee flavored jello, and guess what? It was amazing.
Really?
You know what I had in Singapore? I had an avocado coffee.
I'm jealous of that one.
And it was. Absolutely delicious.
I had Starbucks coffee.
Yeah, you could get that in the cornfield in Reading as well.
Probably.
So what exactly is avocado coffee?
So we went to this CrossFit place in Singapore that I've been before, and the guy comes in and was like, "Hey, Matt, you want some avocado coffee afterwards?" And I'm like, "What did you just say?" He was like, "Avocado coffee." I'm like, "You just named two of my favorite things. Hell yes, I want that." He was like, yeah, it's like avocado ice cream and coffee. And then immediately I was like, oh, ice cream, I don't know. But then forgot about it, worked out. Then he comes in with the avocado coffee. And like, I had it and it's, you know, when it's like ice cream in there, it's like way too, like, I don't like too sweet, which is maybe weird. Mm-hmm. So I was like, no, this is definitely not sugary. I'm definitely not there. Yeah. It's not sugary. So I think what it is, just they made avocado, like they took the avocado, smashed it up and made like an ice cream with it, kind of, and put it in the coffee, and it was like espresso avocado ice cream.
Really?
It was like it was so delicious. It was so good. Yeah.
Okay, so you've been to Japan 9 times. I've been here a bunch of times. You've been here a bunch of times.
Yeah.
What's some of the weirdest things you've seen here? Because last night we went to have Korean barbecue,
right,
which is great, and obviously the beef, the chicken, the tongue is always good. But I'm looking at this menu. First stomach, second stomach, third stomach. Womb. It actually had womb on the menu. I didn't try it.
Like womb, there it is?
No, yeah. Womb, there it is. Womb, there it is. Yeah. W-O-M-B. Womb.
That was just cat.
That might have all been cat. I don't know. Whatever.
I had pig brain once.
Pig brain?
Pig brain. Fried pig brain.
Here?
Yeah, in Japan.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, so we went to this place and was like, hey, you know, like one of the sponsors took us out. Was like, hey, my friend opened this new chicken place. You should come eat there, right? And it was Thanksgiving. So I was like, oh, great. Sweet chicken place on, you know, the holiday of food, which is the only thing I, you know, like, why do I like Thanksgiving? It's holiday of food. So I got there and he was like, oh, please try. And it was, it was like, oh, chicken here. And I'm like, what is that? And he was like, oh, wing, you know, like, okay, sweet, I eat it. I'm like, oh, another bite of this. What is this? And he was like, oh, you know, breast. And I was like, oh, what is this? And he just... eat it. He just points to his head, and I'm like, oh, great. I just ate pig brain. like happy Thanksgiving to me. And like, you know, when it's like, when you start eating something and you don't know what it is, you're like, oh, this is actually, you know, like your brain is like, oh, doesn't taste half brain. So, yeah.
That's the other one that you see here was pizza with corn and squid on it was a good one.
If you go to the rest stop, what is it called? Like the 7-Elevens, whatever.
Oh yeah, convenience store.
You can get like there's like vacuum sealed squid, and I'm like, I'm just supposed to, but like I
it's just so
it.
Foreign
like,
to us, right?
Must be no big fish left in the ocean here, is there?
I mean, I don't know, like, but like seriously, this is like you said, like it's just foreign to us, like you know what I mean? Because it's like.
And it's just every day here. I went one time where they took a lobster. We go to have some lobster as we wind down here, almost ready to go. But they take the lobster. Which one do you want? I want that one. Okay, they take it out of the tank, put it straight on the grill. It's still alive.
What?
Yes. So this lobster is now dying on the grill. Like the flat, you know, like a diner would make eggs on it or something. And they put the skillet on its back, and this thing is screaming. It's going, me. And then the little eyes blow up.
Were you still hungry?
Yeah, I was like, there you go, buddy. Eat up.
They say that too when they throw it in the pot. Like they hear the scream. It's like, oh no, it's not the lobster screaming. It's the gas or something being released or
whatever it was. To me, Jesus. It sounded like a scream. Yeah. Like obviously, I don't think a lobster has a mouth to be screaming.
It sounds like me walking out in Tampa, Florida when I first got there, like in the peak hours without sunscreen. I'm serious.
What's the lobster called in Little Mermaid? Sacrebleu, what is this? Yeah. I don't know. Can I miss?
Yeah,
exactly.
Do we go?
Every time I hear think of lobster, I think of the Simpsons episode where he goes to the expensive restaurant and he goes, lobster, he picks the one that's floating upside down. Everyone goes, it's probably not a good choice. Pick another one.
And every time I think of there used to be a guy here that was a wrestler. His name was Gran Naniwa,
which is
a crab.
Yeah.
His gimmick was a crab. His mask had crab legs on it with a crab face. And then when he was in the ring, he'd stand on the first rope and walk across making crab.
You know,
with his fingers like crab.
Here's the fun. Since you mentioned that,
see crab people went in South Park.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah, crab people.
Back in the day when I was in Swiss Money Holding, I used to do the money walk elbow, which was like exactly the same thing as the grand. And he was like walk on the second rope, but I would do the money signs with my hands as I walked out the second rope and dropped an elbow.
Oh, I used to love Crab Boy Grand Aniva.
Oh, Grand Aniva was great.
So you guys, we're getting ready to go to the show. Going to be a big crowd tonight in Tokyo. You guys like working in front of the Japanese fans?
Yeah, yep. I love it. I think one of my favorite matches was definitely when we wrestled each other.
You and Cesaro worked each other. Yeah,
that was my second favorite. My favorite was when me and Chris were.
Oh, thank you. That was a great match.
My second favorite was
really was a great match.
Second favorite was our tag match.
Yeah. They're both great.
You against Yoshitatsu.
Yeah. You see, but I think with the crowds, is the cool part is every part of the world we go to is different, and to find what they respond to and what they like. Because I remember, like, me and Seamus had one here that they found a way to respond that they liked. And the same with you and me. And then we were wrestling Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
And we would like, we were like in the back just like listening. We were like, okay, this is going to be interesting. Like, what are we going to, and then like, they like some haha stuff. And that's what we did, you know? So it was like,
but you never know. Like, in Singapore the other day, you're thinking, oh, is it going to be like a Japanese crowd? Hell no.
Yeah.
They were just having fun. Like, Tokyo was like Madison Square Garden. But every other country is just like, you know,
it's
like
different. Yeah.
Just having fun.
It's actually funny. I wrestled Big Johnny and Big Show in a handicap match before here.
Big Johnny?
John Laurinaitis?
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
It was Big Show and John Laurinaitis against myself, and it was the weirdest.
Now let me ask this: did Johnny get any reaction? Because obviously he was a big star here in All Japan, but in WWE he's kind of like the class, like the buffoon, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember because he had the tracksuit on, the whole thing, and I just, I'm actually trying to remember now. This is 2012, I think.
Yeah.
Not 13.
No. 13.
He constantly slags me up at the 13. By the way, we go back to
13 shots of vodka.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, let's go back to the patriotic thing, right? So I've sang more Irish songs since I came to America than any other time. And I sang him a load of songs. I sang him Seven Drunken Nights and The Irish Rover. And the whole, like, his head was melted after about 5 minutes of this, or 10 minutes of this.
And Whiskey in a Jarro.
Whiskey in a Jarro, yeah. I feel like that's been too mainstream.
When I grew up in Canada, there was a huge band called The Irish Rovers. And I don't know, were the Irish Rovers popular in Ireland?
I don't really. Irish Rovers is a song, so they probably just took the name of the song.
But they had
the
big song called "Wasn't That a Party?" Was it maybe 5 din?
Party for Kentucky?
I don't know, but look at the shape I'm in. My head is like a football. I think I'm gonna die. Tell me, oh my, wasn't that a party? Got no one,
no one. Sounds like they're from Kentucky. Irish Rovers.
So he got really mad at me because he played me the Wild Rover, right? And he was singing it because we had a show in Syracuse on St. Patty's Day, and he started. They made him sing the Wild Rover, so he did. And
made
I knew,
me dance as well, the bastard. And hit him and the New Day.
Yeah, we made
every
him, first of all, made him dance, and then we gave him the microphone and made him sing the Wild Rover. And I knew when to clap. And he was like, "How do you know that song?" And I'm like, "Well," so I played him. So for his very traditional Irish Wild Rover song, there's a German cover, like a German techno type cover that they do that song. And he was so angry because he was
sacrilegious,
like,
mate.
He got so angry. I'm like, "No, it's great. This is the song I know." You know what I mean?
It was brutal, man. I literally wanted to kick their asses.
All right, last question before we go. What's your favorite match you guys have had as a team? Is the one that stands out yet? Because it's been a year or so.
Yeah, I mean, there's this, like, for example, the cage match. I was proud of.
Yeah,
because
who was that? You guys versus?
It was the Hardys. Oh, just because it was a challenge.
Recent.
That was recent. It was a challenge.
No pins or submissions.
No pinfalls.
We lost a lot of false finishes.
It was all escapes, but it was fun. The one where we beat New Day, when we won our first tag team championship, we beat New Day's 550-day title reign, and then we did a false tag where like. We like, you know, when you turn, the always tag team partner pulls his hand away. So we did that, but then they turned it around on them.
Gotcha,
so we cheated that way to win.
The Survivor Series match was great too.
Survivor Series was
fun. A great finish. he had the sharpshooter on, and Usos was coming in, and just the timing was perfect. Just before he got to Tony, I caught him with the kick,
the bro kick. I think that, because, and that was cool too, because it was, we just started teaming. I actually couldn't get out of my jacket because I forgot to unbutton it. So I was like, it's big pay-per-view. I forget to unbutton my jacket. I try to rip it. It doesn't work.
I'm laughing my ass off.
Like, I look at it. I'm trying to fight a straight jacket off. And this guy, instead of helping me, just stares. And I finally get it off, and he's just dying laughing at me. Luckily, the camera caught away, but I was just like, Jesus. I got a good start. Those stand out. You know, there's a lot of matches online. Events that we have fun with.
Yeah.
I'm very bad at picking.
We also did that one, the Gauntlet match in the UK as well. The crowd with that the whole way as well.
Yeah.
That's where Vince. I'm going to say that anyway.
That's where Vince said.
That's where Vince Lombardi goes, hey, kids, you got a future in this business. That's what Vince Lombardi said.
It's very hard for you to pick a favorite match, you know.
Oh, God. Yeah. I've had a few drinks with me now, Chris, I'll tell you.
Oh, we're getting ready to go. Well, guys, let's go to work. It's a great time. And remember, Cesaro is daddy.
Daddy.
Cesaro's daddy.
He likes to be called daddy for everybody out there, even from the men.
What's daddy,
and the older
what's
guys.
Daddy in Swiss?
Vater.
Vater.
Big daddy Vater.
Big daddy Vater.
Pretty poppy, man.
Thanks again to Cesaro and Sheamus, the WWE Tag Team Champions. They had a tremendous match in Japan later on that night against Gallows and Anderson. Oh, my gosh, one of the best hard-hitting, kick-ass, big-man matches I've ever seen. So congratulations to Gallows and Anderson, my Talk and Shop compadres, and congratulations to Sheamus and Cesaro, not only for having great matches time and time again, but for being the WWE Tag Team Champions and for being now multiple-time guests here on Talk is Jericho. Speaking of multiple-time guests, what about Team Tiger Awesome? They're keeping us in the know when it comes to the most ridiculous news headlines. Let's check in with TTA.
This is the news with Team Tiger Awesome. In national polling news, a new study indicates nearly 60% of Americans have had it with mayonnaise, but 37% of them claim it's just regular mayonnaise they're tired of, 17% of those saying they'd be open to trying a Chipotle or spicy ranch flavor, but 40% of them claimed only if we're talking about a sandwich, not chicken salad. In mansplaining news, what you really need to understand is it's not about the thing you think it's about. I mean, if you're into that, it's cool and no judgment, it's just that that's not really how it works. For more news that's obviously confusing, check out the Team Tiger Awesome show every Sunday on the Jericho Network, right here on Podcast One.
Team Tiger Awesome, as you covered on Laughs at all the news you'll never need to know in this lifetime, every Sunday on the Jericho Network on Podcast One. Go subscribe at Apple Podcasts and be sure to leave a 5-star rating and review. And hey, go ahead and do the same for all the great shows in the Jericho Network. Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon. He's talking to Don Felder, a former Eagle. He's doing a great job killing the town with Storm and Cyrus. Speaking of great jobs, new episodes every Tuesday. Raven Effect, new episodes every Monday. And of course, the flagship show, Keeping It 100 with Conan on Thursdays. Beyond the Darkness, all things paranormal, scaring the crap out of you 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. And if you haven't subscribed to the latest podcast from Beyond the Darkness, get to patreon.com and sign up for True Crime Tuesdays. This podcast is completely ad-free, no commercials at all, and it's just $5 a month. You get new episodes every Tuesday. That's patreon.com. Go check it out. All right, still a few tickets left for my upcoming Worlds of Jericho show in my hometown of Winnipeg with special guests Lance Storm and Cyrus, August 25th at Club Regent Event Center. Tickets are available at Ticketmaster. I'm from Winnipeg, you idiot. Come check out some hilarious stories from my career, from Don and Lance's career. Don't you dare miss it. And hey, let me give one last shout out to all the great Talk is Jericho sponsors. You find them all at podcastone.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. All right, thanks to Saks. Go to saksunderwear.com/Jericho. Get 20% off your foul spout juice. What about Alone? It's real reality. Watch new episodes every Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central on History. Of course, Geico's saving you money on car insurance. And I'm happy that you're here. Thank you for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next and on Friday. One of my favorite bands in the scene and my tour mates, King, are going to be here. They're on the road with Fozzy this spring for the Judas Rising Tour. We had a great time. You're going to love these guys as much as we do. Nonstop laughs. Great rock and roll band and great friends. King is going to be here on Friday. King with a Y. So we'll see you then. But in the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. See you on Friday.
Listen to new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday on the Podcast One app, or subscribe at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.